Our next case is 12-684, Cincinnati Bar Association versus Kathleen Donahoe Metzer and Frank Eric Espol. For the respondent, is Mr. Condit?
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. Madam Chief Justice, members of the court, counsel, my name is Tom Condit, attorney for respondent Kathleen Metzer. To my far left is Mike Metzer, Jr., who's on the brief with me, and to my immediate left is Frank Espol. Your Honors, when I begin oral argument, and by the way, I want to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. We obviously have to split the argument, so we'll see how we can do. I typically start oral arguments saying what the issue is. In this case, the issue is for Kathleen Metzer has been a moving target from the beginning. In the original complaint, it was alleged that she believed that she could advertise free consultations and then later charge for them under certain circumstances. That allegation was removed in an amended complaint. We then go to trial still on the bait and switch theory that somehow you advertise one way, you practice another way. When the smoke clears, we get an opinion from the panel that says only that free consultation is inherently misleading. And now that finding, which we very much disagree with, was repudiated by in the relator's brief, that they don't agree that standing alone is inherently misleading. So I'm standing here now a little bit dizzy from the theories we've run against, and I submit to you that with the panel having found that Mr. Espol's version of the facts and the events of that first client meeting are the more reasonable, I submit that the relator's case has just collapsed here, and they're groping for a theory, and we're a bit stunned that the panel, and I'll speak for Kathleen Metzer only, that the panel still found a violation. Their findings were that by her actions, she violated 7.1. I'm here asking, what actions are we talking about? She advertised free consultation, and then she never had any client contact in this case. What are her actions that misled these clients?
Is it the practice, or what the activity is, just so I'm clear, free consultation, someone comes in for a consultation with an attorney in this office, in her office. At some point during that consultation, they sign a fee agreement, and the meter starts running, and they're charged for that consultation.
That would be misleading, and I think both what the relator wrote in its brief and how the panel opinion was written is misleading in that regard.
Tell me how it works.
Okay. Well, in this case, it's a probate case. So it's
what?
It's a probate case. These were probate clients. Their mother had died. So any fees were going to be according to the Claremont County Court guidelines for fees. So the meter really isn't running. No matter how much work they put in, they're going to get paid according to the fees. So the firm policy is, A, we offer free consultations. B, the free consultation ends when the fee agreement is signed. And the clients understood that, too. If you look in the brief, I think it's page 7 of the facts, the client fully understood that once we sign the fee agreement, they get to work. Three, fees on probate courses are done according to the probate court guidelines. And D, if there's a case of a termination by the client in a contingency fee or other kind of case that's not hourly rate, we will bill quantum merit. Those are the four firm policies that are in that 200-page record. Not a single one of them is unethical. And so we're again asking again, what did Kathleen Metzer do as principal and owner of the firm? What were her actions that violated 7.1?
Well, this was her policy. Give me an example of how this charge starts.
The charge starts because, and this is a burning fact dispute that the panel found in our favor. The clients claimed they showed up, met for 30 minutes, signed a fee agreement, and went home. And then when they terminated the firm, were billed $250 for an attorney conference that day. And they're claiming they were billed for the free consultation. Mr. Espol's version, corroborated by Mike Metzer Sr., who is kind of the administrator at the office and who participated in the meeting, is that after they signed a fee agreement, they stayed for another hour, virtually 45 minutes to an hour, while Mr. Espol left the room, read the will, read the trust. They had a lot more questions. They spent almost an hour before they went home. And when the they terminated 3 weeks later with no other contact, terminated the firm, said, we want our file. Mr. Espel created an quantum merit bill for the work he did after the fee agreement was signed and for some paralegal work, a letter that went out a few days later.
So you're claiming that there was no fee charged for that first consultation?
Absolutely. That's, you know, all of the four witnesses that testified for us, Kathleen Mezer, Frank Espel, Mike Mezer Sr., and Blake Nelson, a paralegal who touches everything in that office. Every single one of them testify without any ambiguity, we never charge for free consultations.
But the free consultation is only 20 minutes of the time spent on that particular date.
20 to 30 before the fee agreement was signed.
All right, and then it's, here's a fee agreement. We are going to start charging right now.
Those words were never uttered because there was no charge. There was no billable time that was accrued.
It was after the fee agreement.
Only on a quantum merit basis. They were never going to be billed. They weren't billed. All fees would be according to the court guidelines. It was only when they were terminated that they said, fine, we'll bill on quantum merit.
Well, you're talking about a time that is going to be determined by probate court, you would have put in time for that consultation after the fee agreement was signed.
I don't know that that's right or not. I can't tell you that. I can tell you exactly how they would build a probate because this case never got that far. So
Mr. Aspel, how was it done in other cases? This wasn't the first case they used this fee agreement, was it?
Correct. They've never had a probate client terminate them. Kathy Mezer said this is the first time it's ever happened in 23 years.
Okay.
So there's no precedent for it.
All right, say they spend an hour and a half at the first consultation. After a half hour, a fee agreement is signed.
Yes.
Do they bill for the next hour on their application to probate court for attorney fees?
I don't do probate in my private practice. Mr. Espel might have to answer that for you in terms of how they would do a fee application. But if it required accounting for your time, I assume they probably would because it's work done after the fee agreement was signed.
But was that disclosed to the client that while you're sitting in this office under the umbrella of a free consultation, you're actually being charged?
And that really gets to a problem because the clients don't even claim that kind of confusion. The clients claim that they signed the fee agreement and went home. We are now into an artificial construct of a theoretical debate that nobody believes happened. The client, the complaining clients don't say that happened. They say we were there 30 minutes, went home, later got billed for it.
If they in fact had gone home and the firm had done an hour of work while they're not there, after the fee agreement was signed, they would be entitled to charge for that in quantum merit.
Exactly right. That's the irony, that if Mr. Espel, if I can use this lightly, was delusional and actually believed the clients had stayed when they hadn't, but if he actually did an hour of work, he could have billed that in quantum merit. So it's a fact dispute that in the end, it's hard to understand this fact dispute.
But you keep going in circles for me, and so maybe your co-counsel will answer this question, because I think the Chief Justice has asked it five different ways.
Okay.
So disregard this case. In other probate cases, because whether you file an application for fees in the probate court, it's still fees that are being paid to you. When a client comes in for a free consultation and then signs a fee agreement, is the bill that's submitted to the probate court, whether this is the first time you've been terminated or not, is the bill that's submitted to the probate court, does it include that hour of free consultation?
And I'm
Let me have him, and then when he stands up, yes.
The answer was, I don't know. My understanding is
okay, so if you don't know, let's hear from them. It's okay.
Okay.
That's a very simple question.
Yeah, my understanding is probate court guidelines go by value of the state.
It doesn't matter. It's the legal issue that I'm interested in.
Okay. All right. So having said, that's really the issue in a nutshell. Free consultation was advertised, and I can't believe that that's deemed inherently misleading. I have to believe the panel believed, as the relator argued, it's really that advertising phrase tied to some inconsistent
Did the fee agreement itself refer to the free consultation in any way?
I don't believe so.
Okay.
So
when the master commissioner says, at the time of the meeting, respondent did not advise the sisters, the free consultation ended when they signed the agreement. I guess that's the issue to me. It's what did the people expect? They expected a free consultation, which could mean I go to the office, I don't pay anything, they go home and get a $250 bill. And my question is, when they signed the paper, the fee agreement, did it refer to the fact that, you know, you're going to pay a portion of today or whatever?
Well again, they weren't going to pay a portion of that today. They were never going to get billed for that until the termination happened.
But they got a $250 bill.
And until the termination happened and the in quantum merit thing. I think it's important because it gets misleading. Reading some of the briefs, reading the opinion, it sounds like it was billable time. It wasn't billable time until you got to the quantum merit situation.
Counsel, you're well past your time, and I think we'd like to hear from Mr. Espel to clear up some of our questions.
All right, Glenn, thank you.
Chief Justice, Your Honors, everyone's entitled to his own opinion, but not to his own facts. I mean, the fact finding by the panel was that the clients came in for a free initial consultation. They signed the fee agreement, and I also spent an hour that day working on their case after they signed the fee agreement. And the when we did the quantum, when they discharged us, I then charged on quantum merit, which, based on this court's decisions in Reed and Fox. And so I made an itemization of the work I did after that.
Did you tell them once they signed the fee agreement, okay, now the quantum merit or the basis for this firm to charge you has started?
No, I hadn't spelled it out.
You hadn't.
And the reason is because the billing for probate cases is based on the Claremont County's probate guidelines, which are based on the value of the estate.
For the attorney work or for the executor's fee?
No, that's for the attorney's work.
You take a percentage as an attorney?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's by the court's guidelines.
Okay.
And it only, the only reason for for the hourly was because when they discharged us under this court's guidelines, I was supposed to do a quantum merit. So.
But the problem here is this all happens within one day, correct?
No, it didn't.
It wasn't just the first time that they came in for the initial consultation?
They came in one time. They came in on February 3rd. They did the initial consultation. We also did an hour of work after that period. We sent them a reminder letter a few days afterward, and they discharged us, I believe it was 23 days after the initial consultation.
You said you sent them a reminder letter. What was that about?
After the initial session, I'd given them a list of documents that we still needed from them. So about 5 or 6 days after that initial meeting, they hadn't brought anything back in, so we sent them a letter to remind them to bring those things in.
Okay.
Was any of the bill from for work that you did past February 3rd?
Yes. Yes, and the complainants didn't have any complaint about that.
And that was after they signed the fee agreement?
Yes.
So you're saying the $250 was for work after February 3rd, after the fee agreement?
No, it was for work on February 3rd, but after they signed the fee agreement.
And the work continued?
And we also did additional work afterward, which you billed an additional, I believe it was $125.
Okay.
Counsel, what is your rate for quantum merit in this case?
Our normal hourly rate is $250 an hour.
And that was in this case, too?
Yes.
Did the billing statement you issued indicate the charge was for the consulting fee, or did it indicate it was for additional work? Or did it specify?
If I remember what it said attorney conference. It was because it was a time when we were meeting all together.
Pardon me, please.
I believe it said attorney conference. And it was because that we were all together.
Well, that might suggest to them, then, that they were being charged for the consultation if it's at attorney conference.
Well, it's my understanding that Mike Messer Sr. explained that to Jessica Burns that day when the bill was presented to her, that was for the work we did after the initial consultation.
Is that when she wanted to have the file retrieved?
Yes.
And she said, she questioned and said, you're not getting your file until you pay.
Mr. Messer denied saying that.
Pardon me?
Mr. Messer certainly denied saying that.
But he didn't give her the file unless she paid the bill, right?
No, he did give her the file.
Without paying the bill?
No, she did pay.
Oh, Jesus.
But he certainly didn't. I believe him when he says he didn't refuse to give it to her unless he paid. We'll reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal.
Okay. Mr. Ruckman.
Good morning, Your Honors. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. We're here today on another issue about lawyer advertising. The undisputed admitted facts before the panel, which the board adopted, clearly indicates a violation by both Ms. Messer and Mr. Esbol.
Are you allowed to advertise that you will do free consultation?
You are, Your Honor.
And if you sign a fee bill and then you start charging, are you allowed to do that?
You are under quantum merit. But the violation here occurs when, in this case, Ms. Burns and Ms. Mahaffey, who were the daughters of the decedent who came in for the free consultation, were billed for the time spent with Mr. Esbol and Mr. Messer, who, not Mr. Messer that is here, the Mr. Messer that is the office manager.
Okay, they maintained that the time spent before the fee agreement was signed was not charged.
They do maintain that.
And they maintain they spent time after the fee agreement was signed and billed that on a quantum merit. If that is true, is that a violation?
That is a violation under these circumstances because the ad, the web ad, which is Exhibit 4, does not put any limitations on or define what is a free consultation.
So you don't think a client, your client comes in, you talk to the client the half an hour, the client says, I'm going to sign you up, and you think that client expects if they work another 6 hours that same day they're going to get it free?
The clients in this case did not indicate they were working 6 hours. The client...
No, I'm asking you hypothetically, because you're asking for a principle of law that any time they spend on that first visit, even after an agreement is signed, is free time. That's the principle you're saying has to be applied for there to be a violation, correct?
I'm not asking for that broad of a principle, Your Honor. In this case, when there is no explanation, which Mr. Esbol admitted he did not explain to these folks, once you sign this fee agreement, it changes into a potentially billable event, chargeable.
You think
that is where.
Okay, so you think that the client's expected to continue to receive free service the remainder of that meeting?
Correct, and that's what they testified
and
to.
And that, in your mind, rises to a level of a clear and convincing violation. The client expected something, the attorney started billing after an agreement was signed, and that's a clear and convincing violation.
It is, Your Honor, under the facts of this case, where it is undisputed. The ad was there with no limitations. The clients were not told there is any limitation.
Let me ask you about a factual finding. Did the panel find, as a matter of fact, and I can't tell from the briefs or the opinions, that there was not time spent after the fee agreement was signed? Do they disbelieve these parties?
No. The panel found that Mr. Esbol and Mr. which was corroborated by Mr. Messer's version of what occurred during this consultation was the more reasonable and more credible version of what happened.
So what we come down to as a court of law that we have to find is if you do not disclose in a free consultation setting, which is permissible, if you do not disclose that once you sign that fee agreement, now the clock starts. If you don't say that out loud verbally, That's a violation.
Yes, Your Honor. Okay.
I just want to be sure I understand what you're asking us to do.
Yes. And the other part of what occurs here, and that is undisputed in this case, is the simple fact that during the consultation, there was no disclosure about it's now potentially a fee-generating event. And when these folks went to pick up their file after a while that it was there, first, undisputed, they did not dispute the charge for February 7th, where there was a letter and some other work that was generated, because that was after they left the office on February 3rd when they thought they were getting a free consultation.
And why was this not sent to a fee arbitration?
It came to the grievance committee, and the grievance committee investigated it.
Why did you send it to fee arbitration? Are you allowed to?
Your Honor, in all honesty, I'm not positive if we're allowed to or not when it comes to the grievance committee. And the other part of which is not disputed under the facts of this case is that the contention when Ms. Burns went to retrieve the file was over the bill that had the charge for February 3rd that said attorney conference, and no indication that any part of that attorney conference was no charge, free, or anything like that. That is when the dispute arose about, in her mind, she was getting charged for what she and her... Yes,
and that really, I guess, would be the issue. If there was work done, when you send a bill, you itemize the work, even if it's quantum merit. They did not indicate on the bill. If all they put is attorney consultation, of course that's what she was thinking. Did they ever testify to what the actual work is they did that they asked for the quantum merit for?
Mr. Espel indicated that what happened at the February 3rd meeting was... It was basically two parts. The first half hour or so was the free consultation, and once they signed the probate fee agreement, it turns into a fee-generating event because they are hired at that point.
So there was no supplemental work other than continuing the conversation?
At that meeting, there was a charge, I believe it was February 7th, for, as Mr. Espel just indicated, a letter and some other little work that was done afterwards. But it was like...
But I believe they just, it was in their briefs that they consulted, but then he left the room, he looked at the will, he looked at the documents. Was that disputed?
It was disputed, but the panel found that Mr. Espel's...
He did do work in reviewing documents after the initial consultation, after the signing.
They found that Mr. Espel's version was correct, was more credible, and that there was some work when he walked out of the room.
And that gets back to the legal issue that seems to be, do you have to tell them your free consultation is done, now we're charging you, and you have to say that orally? That seems to be what you're saying we have to find to uphold your finding.
It is.
Okay. Or perhaps a suggestion that they itemize their bill. If he stepped out for 20 minutes and did legal research, that would be what was on the bill.
I didn't hear Your Honor's first part.
I said he could, or they could do an itemized bill, which would have alleviated the confusion if, in fact, the credible version that the panel found, and we'll get into later where that deserves a public reprimand, but the easy thing to do is that when you bill, you itemize exactly what you're billing for, 20 minutes of research time.
Correct. And in this case, if there was a part of the itemized bill said attorney conference, no charge, or free consultation, or, you know, initial consultation, no charge.
It was $375 total.
Yes, Your Honor.
On February 3rd, it says attorney conference $250, and on February 7th, it's $125 for further work. So it's really the misunderstanding that the date of February 3rd, when they show up, they thought was going to be a free consultation because they were there for the entire time.
Correct. That is exactly it, Your Honor.
If they had done an itemized bill, you would still say that's in violation if they didn't tell them at the time of the conference they were going to start itemizing.
Not if there is an item on the bill that says initial consultation, no charge.
So ethically, they can commit a violation by failing to say no charge on a bill. That's what you're saying?
That coupled with an advertisement on the web that says free consultation and no explanation either on the website about any limitations, you know, for instance, a half hour, or while you're there, okay, this is potentially a fee-generating event. You've signed this contract, and now we can charge you for our services that we're rendering to you.
Mr. Brockman, do our regulations governing advertising by lawyers mandate any of the provisions that you're suggesting?
They do not specifically dictate, the regulations do not even specifically dictate that you have to keep contemporaneous time or that you have to turn in an itemized bill. They suggest that.
Do the regulations speak to a free consultation?
I have not seen anything in the regulations that addresses free consultations other than there's been opinions that say it's okay to have a free, you know, advertise you've got a free consultation, is impliedly in that is as long as it's free.
Have you looked at the American Bar Association model rules related to this topic?
We did look at those when we were researching this, and we didn't come up with anything on point, or we would have brought it to the panel's attention at the time.
So how would a lawyer who is permitted to advertise that there would be a free consultation know, but for this case, that they should put down free consultation until such time as a fee agreement is signed or until such time as the parties come to a quantum merit resolution and sign a document in which the hourly fee will be implemented?
It would be good, prudent practice if you're going to charge for something that took place in one sitting from the perspective.
Well, I'm understanding your argument, but I'm also looking more globally at literally thousands of lawyers who are obviously advertising all over in every medium in this fashion. And shouldn't they have some knowledge about limitations on their ability to do this before they face some disciplinary sanction?
The limitations would be what we have in the Code of Professional Responsibility, and in this particular case, about not being misleading in the advertisement of your services.
That so the misleading part, if I understood your argument, is that on the fee bill, the statement said a charge for consultation, which was interpreted by the client as being a charge for what they had believed was a free consultation.
That is part of it, coupled with the website ad that said, call us for a free consultation.
And had they simply put down consultation, no charge, additional work after fee, reviewing the will or preparing applications, etc., and the charge would have been in that regard, then we wouldn't be here.
If it was coupled with an explanation by Mr. Espol at the time that by signing this, we are in a position where we have a potentially fee-generating event if I'm going to continue work today on your file.
Yes, but now that part about the fee-generating event is what you think we should make part of the rules, because that's not part of any of the rules or part of the advertising regulations.
I don't think it's necessarily something you should make as part of the rules, Your Honor. I think under the facts of this case, with these people, with these two ladies coming
in. You think under the guidelines of not being misleading, there's an unwritten, inherent obligation on the part of a lawyer to disclose affirmatively that fees will be generated from this point forward?
Like what happened in the Zouderer case.
Pardon me, please.
Like what happened in the Zouderer case when the attorney was charged with a violation that was upheld by the Supreme Court of the United States, that when he advertised something to the effect of no recovery, no fees, that in fact at that point the client would be responsible for the costs and expenses, and he was found to have violated the code because he didn't include in his ad or in any type of fee agreement that was signed, he didn't include in the ad, rather, that you are responsible for the fees and costs. That's different than no recovery, no costs.
Thank
and
you.
That's what
counsel, if we look at 7.1, the actual language of 7.1, the lawyer shall not make or use a false, misleading, non-verifiable communication about the lawyer's services. The second sentence, a communication is false or misleading if it contains a material misrepresentation of fact or law, or omits a fact necessary to make the statement considered as a whole not materially misleading. That seems to be a little bit more than what we're talking about here. And I guess my question is, did not the respondents here make changes to their practices and documents? I think I read that somewhere.
Based on the testimony at the hearing, they did. They have made changes to their documents. I have no reason to doubt that. And let me be clear about this, and I mean this sincerely. In no way, shape, or form am I trying to say personally or the Bar Association that these people are bad people or disparaging them as you know, something bad like that. They've made a mistake that violates the code of ethics.
But
that's all
the material misrepresentation, and by clear and convincing evidence. We're talking about a disciplinary action here that needs to be proven by clear and convincing evidence. And certainly it seems that a communication problem, maybe even between the bar and the respondents here, exists, and that all it would have taken was, let's look at this and make some changes. But we're talking even a public reprimand. We're talking about a disciplinary action. Does this really, in your mind, raise to the level of a disciplinary sanction?
It does, Your Honor, because of the facts that were developed at the hearing, the uncontroverted facts, and also the testimony of Ms. Burns and Ms. Mahaffey, which the panel did not say was, incredible, unbelievable, that they thought the entire session was free. And that's why the dispute generated. We would just ask, on behalf of the Cincinnati Bar Association, Ms. Morgan and I, to uphold the findings of the board, find that a violation has occurred, also find that a public reprimand is the appropriate sanction under these circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time here. You can have 30 seconds.
What Mr. Brockman's advocating would be cutting-edge quantum merit jurisprudence. The clients fully understood a free consultation. Please look at page 7 of my brief where we quote from the Mahaffey deposition. Mr. Espel's failure to communicate in this situation does not throw ethical liability to Kathleen Mezer. And finally, I don't want to insult you with what should be obvious, but I need to say this because of Kathleen Mezer's testimony. Please read pages 203 to 07 where she testified about her practice, everything she sacrificed, raising 4 kids, building this practice. I'll tell you, a reprimand cuts deep. They've done great work on the east side of Cincinnati. To have an opinion come out saying they've misled clients to get an extra $250 from them, that cuts deep. So I would ask, you're not only protecting the community, I hope you're protecting good, honest attorneys. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marshall, will you adjourn court, please?
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. This open session of the Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio now stands adjourned.